other difference is I think that Richard Nixon was a far less dangerous man than Donald Trump. That we have two very different characters that we're talking about here. Yes, we are talking about a possible conspiracy, certainly involving people around the president while he was a candidate, before he was the president, perhaps or perhaps not involving the president, although we don't have any solid evidence of that at this point, but a very different situation. Richard Nixon was a capable, able man who understood history, understood the institutions of the United States government. We don't have that with Donald Trump. We now have a president of the United States who has accused his predecessor in an outrageous bit of lying. We have a serial compulsive liar as the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon was a criminal president. He lied to cover up his criminality. But I think it's very different than when you have someone like Trump who lies in a way we have never seen a president of the United States lie routinely, make things up out of whole cloth, have a press secretary who himself invents things or goes along with these crazy inventions of the president. Very different.
Yeah, lying about the lies that they lied about is how the saying goes.
Does anyone remember Milli Vanilli? Now, I don't know exactly what my demographic is here, but I imagine most of you have heard of them. And the stunning thing about them, so they were a pop group in the late 90s, and they had a pretty good thing going. They had a gigantic string of hits. It was two dudes. It was Fab Moran and Rob Pilatus, and they're from the Netherlands. As a matter of fact, one of them still practices music, honestly practices music in the Netherlands to this day. So they had a string of hits and they had a hit record and everything was going great. And then they got nominated for a Grammy, which was absolutely devastating to them. Now, I know that sounds strange. If you know the story of Milli Vanilli, then you know why that's devastating. And I remember seeing in an interview with them, after everything had, their whole world had crashed down on them, I remember hearing Fab Moran say, all we had to do was not win the Grammy. That's it. It was for Best New Artist. All we had to do was not win the Grammy. And we won the goddamn Grammy. Excuse my French, I'm direct quote here. And he goes, and then that's when everything went wrong. That's when everything came crashing down. Milli Vanilli were lip syncing, which when we think of lip syncing and pop music, we expect it now. It's not such a big deal. But back then, it was absolutely earth shattering. So the big difference they try to say now is, well, they were lip syncing, you know, on stage, and they weren't actually singing on their records. When they talk about people like Madonna or Britney Spears or Katy Perry, they go, these guys are lip syncing on stage, which is absolutely ridiculous. I would never do that. But they're not lip syncing on the records. They're actually singing on the records. So those people are true, but I suppose that's neither here nor there. But once they won the Grammy, then that's when they got found out. That's when there was a little bit more scrutiny, a much brighter light put on them. They go, all we had to do was not win. And they might not have ever been found out. They had several concerts where they went out on stage and the tape that they sang along to skipped. They run backstage, they fix it, they come back out, and it was like nothing ever happened. And it wasn't a big deal. But once they got the Grammy, that's when the white hot light was put on them. Now, why in the bloody hell am I talking about a musical group on a political show? Oh, just you wait, sons and daughters, just you wait. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 234. I missed y'all over the holidays, and I am so glad to be back with you today. So once they won the Grammy and they got that light on them, then that's when more questions start being asked. Inspirations, you know, how'd you come up with this? How'd you come up with that? And then they just find, you know what? Hey, sorry, we can't handle it. And and it was a tremendous fall. And I got to thinking about this after learning about the book that just came out by Michael Wolff called Fire and Fury. It's been in the headlines in a gigantic way in the last week. And what we learned is what I've suspected all along and I've expressed on this microphone on this show. And that is that Trump never, ever wanted to be president. If you look at the entire field of GOP candidates, most of them never wanted to be president. There are some people like Mike Huckabee. He doesn't do it anymore. He did it about 3-4 times in a row, but he doesn't do it anymore. But he would run. He'd run for president. He put his name out there. I'm running for president. He'd go state to state. He'd go to Iowa and all these others. And then when he'd drop out fairly early. He'd raise his speaking fees. He'd, you know, demand more money for appearances. He'd get this job or that job. And it was only to raise their brand. And Trump is the ultimate in that. He decided to run for president the same way he has half a dozen times before. And it was only meant to raise his brand. And what we find out from Michael Wolff's new book is he never, ever wanted to be president. Expressed to his wife, I promise I'm not going to win. And then the numbnuts in America gave him the presidency. And it's quoted that he looked a ghost when it came out that he won. And I remember seeing his acceptance speech that night. And he hit the stage. And yeah, he was pretty timid. He wasn't excited at all. He goes, crap. So for me, that's his Grammy moment. All he had to do was not win the presidency. And then he won the presidency. And it's all coming crashing down. So the two guys, just to put a neat little bow on it, Fab Moran and Rob Pilatus, not long after, I'd say about 8 years after, unable to handle the scrutiny, Rob Pilatus ended up killing himself at age 33. But Fab Moran is still practicing music in the Netherlands. So it's sort of this tale of the way two people handle the pressures that come with that. One of them became a legitimate musician, and then the other one just gave up on life altogether. We've learned that the president's mental health is not all that fantastic. And if I have to make a prediction on this show, and I'm not fabulous at predictions, I've had some good ones and then I've had some sour ones, but I don't mind making them because I feel like they come from an educated place. But I don't think Trump is going to finish out the year. When we found out about this book, he decided that the best way, oh God, this is marketing 101. The best way to make it go away really is just to ignore it. And he decided to promote the hell out of it and even try to stop the release. Oh boy. So I went on Amazon. I don't think I'm going to buy the book. I doubt I'm going to read it. I feel like I'm going to know every damn thing that's in it before I even get a chance to scoop up a copy. But when I went on Amazon and looked at the folks who had bought this thing, I would say about a quarter of the comments, and most people are rating it, you know, 4 and 5 stars. There's a few 1 stars, but they're kind of jokey. It's like people are trying to use Trump language to write reviews of the book. I mean, they're worth reading because they're kind of funny. But the 4 and 5 stars, I'd say about a quarter of them are saying, I bought this book because he tried to ban it. You don't ban books. That is the fastest. That is the best way to promote a book. But now that the truth is out and the world knows, and today is Saturday. I'm taping on a Saturday, Saturday the 6th. Dum Dum is on Twitter this morning on an absolute tear, telling people about how absolutely effing brilliant he is, about how healthy he is, about how smart he is. And obviously that's not going to end well either, because Twitter is having a field day just dissecting the president right now. I think the larger takeaway lesson is, how did we get here? How did we end up with an entire field of GOP candidates who've effectively become professionals at running for president? And then, of course, the ones that get elected, well, they do even worse. See, if Ted Cruz raises his brand a little bit, makes a little more money, it's not going to affect me. I think the only person that wanted to be president that was running in the last election, in the 2016 election for the GOP, I think the only person that wanted to be president was Jeb. And he was what, like the one of the first people out of the field, ran out of money the fastest. It was crazy. And then all these people that didn't want to be president were able to stand, and then Trump beat them all. So we have all these people that run for president, not because they want to be president, but because they want to be professionals at running for president, raise their brand. That doesn't affect me. But the people that actually get elected to Congress or actually get elected president, well, then they just do tons of terribly horrible things. I suppose the GOP during my lifetime is not the GOP during my dad's lifetime or during my granddad's lifetime, which was, you know, that's when you had Eisenhower, who had his bads, but he also had a lot of his goods. If you listen to some of his old speeches, he sounds fairly progressive. But if you look at today's GOP, there isn't a single thing. There isn't. I make this challenge, although there's not a single thing that they have ever passed, that they've ever sponsored, that they've ever passed, that actually helps the middle class. So how do they keep getting elected? One of the first things that happened after this book came out was the Mercers. You probably don't know who that is, but the Mercers are a father and daughter team, billionaires. And what they do is they fund far right-wing causes. I have such trouble saying that. I used to have trouble saying right-wing wackos too. I used to say right-wing wackos. And they are huge funders of Breitbart. They were gigantic funders of Steve Bannon. As recently as October, Rebecca Mercer, the daughter, she brought a guest to a big right-wing foray. And her guest for that party, it's just a few months ago, was Steve Bannon. And now they've yanked all of the money from him. The reason that we have ended up not just with the politics that we have, but with the particular candidates that we have, not just on the right, but also on the left, to a large degree. And there are a few exceptions, like Bernie Sanders. But the reason we've ended up with the kind of candidates that we have is because of money in politics. And there's no two ways about it. With the GOP not passing a single thing in their history ever that helps the middle class, but still managing to get middle class votes, that's insane. They're not doing a single, you can't name a single thing that the GOP has done for the middle class. What about those tax cuts they just passed? That's not for the middle class. And that's been proven. I'm working with a CPA now. I don't have him working in an official capacity for me, but I am talking with him all the time. And I said, hey, my wife's pretty good at taxes, so I don't know if I'm going to bring him on just yet, but I might. But I said, hey, what do you make of this tax bill? And this guy is not political. I bring it up. He doesn't talk about it, but taxes are his thing. He's a CPA. And so he says, the tax bill. He says, I looked at it. He says, yeah, there are some things in there that might be short-term helpful to middle class. He goes, it's going to be terrible for lower class. He says, the bill really only seems to help the super rich. And I go, good. I needed a nonpartisan opinion on that. And this is from a tax guy. And this is not, obviously, this is not something that's going to help the middle class. So how do these guys keep getting elected? This is money in politics. But there's also a good degree of salesmanship. So let's look at the stock market, which, by the way, you and I we largely do not benefit from. Unless you own stock and you own a lot of stock. So yeah, some of us have our 401ks and some of these other retirement investments in the stock market. But really, we don't get most of the gains from the stock market. The most people that make their money from the stock market make their money only from the stock market. And then they make money on something called capital gains, which is why there was such a huge push to lower the capital gains rate. And capital gains is unearned income. See, when you go make money by the sweat of your brow, that's earned income. You drive a bus, you dig trenches, you're a teacher. you're making money by the sweat of your brow. That's earned income. These guys that have a lot of money in the stock market, it's all unearned income. They pay capital gains. And they're the ones who are largely affected by the stock market. But if you listen to the top and the bottom of the hour news, you watch network television, they will talk about the stock market all the time. Why? It largely doesn't affect a lot of us, and it's definitely not how you measure a good or bad economy. And then, of course, but they talk about it all the time. They make it like it's a big deal to you, like it's going to really help you out. But it doesn't. It's not for you, and it's not going to help you out. It's not a bad thing. Now, on the way up, you really see no benefit or little to no benefit. But on the way down, you will suffer the downs. And what of the economy? They go, hey, look, Trump's first year, gigantic, right? 1.8 million jobs created, which is the lowest that we've had over, I think, the past 7 years. So here's the way the budgets work. So Trump is trying to take all the credit for the budget right now. My God, look what I did to the budget. I'm so gosh darn great. So the way the government works is the budget goes October to the following September. So through the new year to September. And the Congress has to pass a new budget. And this happens every year. When Obama was president, we had these gigantic fights because the Republicans absolutely did not want to pass anything that had anything that Obama wanted in it, which is why we shut down the government a couple of times, because the Republicans decided to just, you know, dig their feet in and not pass anything that N-bomb wanted. So Trump is trying to get credit for the economy right now, but he's still operating under Obama's budget. It's a good idea for the past president, you know, whoever was just president, to have a budget that runs through almost the entire first year of the next president. That way, when he comes in, he or she, boy, I'd sure like it to be a she someday, he or she comes in, well, they've got some time to figure out their budget. They got some time to get their bearings as president. Nobody who comes in as president has experience as president. So it's a good idea to have that budget run through a good chunk of their first year so that they can figure things out. Fine. So in September, the Republicans were supposed to pass a budget. And I say the Republicans because they're trying to do it without the Democrats, which is not a fantastic idea, but they're trying to go it alone anyway. These people lose elections by several thousand or several million votes, and they claim that they have a mandate. This is the state that we find ourselves in. These are our politics. And that's another thing that's just affected by money. Money during 2010 was dumped into a project called Red Map, which assured this, that if the Republicans lose by a little bit, then they win. If they lose by almost a lot of bit, they win. And if they win, they win. The only way the Democrat can win is if they win and win by a gigantic margin. So the budget was not passed in September. They did a continuing resolution, kicked the can down the road. And then they did another continuing resolution over December. So we're still operating under the Obama budget. We've started seeing slides. And the amount of jobs created monthly has begun sliding. So with still operating under Obama's budget and with people believing that the new president is just doing a fantastic job, they could just continue operating under this budget. And nobody's paying attention to this. When I visit right-wing blogs and pages and sites, they're touting, oh my God, look how great he did. Never mind that the growth was bigger and longer under Obama. But they go, oh my God, look how great he's doing. Never had this under Obama. Because, of course, they had their eyes closed and their fingers planted firmly in their ears with their head under a rock for 8 years and didn't notice anything until the white guy did it. So we're still operating under that budget. It'll be interesting to see if they pass a budget. If they do pass a budget. And we saw this during the George W. Bush administration. His first year, things went pretty good until, of course, 9/11 happened. And then we began a slide, and then we moved back up. But then during the end of his administration, we saw an absolute upside down and inside out crash. And with passing the tax law, I think our crash is inevitable. it might not hit until 2019 when potentially the Democrats take power. But everything about the GOP is this kind of planning, these kinds of time bombs. And when the economy takes a dip in 2019, if the Democrats hold either one or both houses, you will hear the Republicans scream at the top of their lungs, "My God, look at what the Democrats just did!" But obviously, that's not the way budgets, politics, and government works. But good luck talking to these folks, because most of them, most of the Republicans, do not understand the way government works. You can't govern if you don't believe in government. So one of the responses to the book, Trump has banned cell phones from the West Wing. Not his own, of course. I mean, he sits quietly in his room screaming at the television and eating cheeseburgers while tweeting angry things that he sees on Fox and Friends. This is our life now, because money in politics. One of the things that we learned is that cell phones are now banned in the West Wing, because that's going to make all the difference in the world. I have a better idea for what might really make all the difference in the world.
And Trump Organization personnel, stop lying to news organizations. We catch you when you do it.
The comparisons to Richard Nixon and this particular president have not been in short supply. And as we reach the end of the Trump administration, and I know that that really just walks us right into the Pence administration, which is also not going to be awesome. Because, see, Pence is going to do all of the exact same damage. I suspect that Pence is already president. So what's going to happen with Pence as president is he will continue doing exactly what Donald Trump. Look, Donald Trump's nominees are the exact opposite of what every single department needed. You find some guy that doesn't believe in global warming or climate change. Fine, make him the head of the EPA. You find somebody dumb as a brick that wants to shut down every public school. Fine, put them in charge of public schools. Every single person that he picked is the exact opposite. Oh, Health and Human Services? Yeah, pick somebody from the drug industry. Everyone's the exact opposite. And these aren't his friends. These aren't people that he knows. And they're definitely not the best people. Think they were all picked by Pence. So yeah, I understand the end of the Trump administration walks us right into the Pence administration, but he's going to do all the exact same damage, but he's going to do it without screaming about it on Twitter and without, you know, going on TV and calling people fat and retarded and all the rest. He'll do all the exact same damage. But the end of the Trump administration is going to do a massive amount of damage to the GOP. After Nixon had to resign, it took the GOP a long time to recover from it. They eventually did. They got Ronald Reagan in 81. And then, of course, we've been under Reaganomics for 30 years. So obviously the fight never ends. But I think that this year, 2018, we will see Trump resign. I don't think there will be an impeachment, because impeachment is largely a political process. And the Republicans are completely okay with every single thing that this guy is doing. And with respect to the FBI, I believe that we've already seen what is historically referred to as the Saturday Night Massacre. Michael Beschloss on the Saturday Night Massacre.
There are some parallels. That was a Saturday night in 1973. Richard Nixon was president. It was the Watergate scandal, and he was fighting for his life. There was a special prosecutor who had been appointed, Archibald Cox, who was demanding Richard Nixon's famous tapes, and Nixon was refusing to give them up. And so Nixon finally decided he's going to fire Archibald Cox. But to do that, he had to get his attorney general to do it. The attorney general was Elliot Richardson, an upstanding gentleman from Massachusetts. He said, absolutely not. I will quit before that happens. So he quit. The number two was a man named William Ruckelshaus. He wouldn't do it either. He also quit. Number three was Robert Bork, who later on was nominated for the Supreme Court. The nomination failed. Bork said, I will fire Cox. Cox was fired, and there was a cordon thrown around his offices. The FBI was called in. and that was called the Saturday Night Massacre. It was said on this network by the anchor of NBC at the time, John Chancellor, this may be the greatest constitutional crisis in our history.
Michael Beschloss is easily one of my favorite historians. I could just listen to that guy talk all day, and I like the way he puts it. He puts it in plain language. There's nothing all that wonky about it. So what we're hearing from the Trump administration right now and from Fox News, which is effectively an extension of the Trump administration, the FBI's just got it out for him, right? They're just, oh my God, they've always had it out for him. They don't like him over there. There was an article that came out in November of 2016 because they were investigating Hillary at the time. And the fact that they came out a week before the election and said that they're reopening this investigation on Hillary Clinton. There are any number of people that work in the Clinton administration that felt pretty good that they were going to win. There was no way Trump is going to win. And the very first time that doubt was ever cast on that was when the investigation was reopened 1 week before the election. And so there was this article that came out in Politico by Spencer Ackerman. And the headline is, "The FBI is Trumpland. Anti-Clinton atmosphere spurred leaking," sources say. So there are two people right now, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. One's an FBI agent, one's an FBI lawyer. They, if you're a conservative, you already know these names because Fox News has been just throwing them against the wall and screaming their guts about how awful these people are, how anti-Trump the FBI is. But the texts that were exchanged between these two, and yeah, they said that Clinton should win the election, you know, 100 million to nothing. They called Trump a moron. But what you're not hearing in conservative media is these two FBI employees that were working on the Russia investigation, is they weren't just sharing anti-Trump texts. They were also sharing anti-Clinton texts. They didn't like either one of them. But of course, the selective reporting in conservative media makes you think that, oh my God, all they did was hate it on Trump. No, no, no. There was lots of anti-Clinton stuff, too. And once Robert Mueller found out about it, Peter Strzok was fired. You know, that, I mean, he just got rid of him. He said, no, you can't work on this anymore. Sorry. And that happened, God, that must have happened half a year ago or longer. I mean, long, long time ago. Mueller took care of it himself. He said, we can't have an appearance of bias in this investigation. It's too important. And only months later, when conservative media found out about it, they decided to make a case that, oh my God, look what they're doing. Look, they obviously absolutely hate him over there. So, quoting from the article here, "A deep antipathy to Hillary Clinton exists within the FBI. Multiple bureau sources have told The Guardian, spurring a rapid series of leaks damaging to her campaign just before the election. Current and former FBI officials, none of whom were willing or cleared to speak on the record, have described a chaotic internal climate that resulted from outrage over James Comey's July decision not to recommend an indictment over Clinton's maintenance of a private email server on which classified information is transmitted. The FBI is Trumpland," said one current agent. And they just went off about how much they do not like her. So when I hear all of this crap about how it's obviously Clinton land over there, it's not. And it's more likely to be conservative than anything. Robert Mueller is a Republican, but he's one of those old-timey Republicans that has some dignity, that actually has a core. I mean, who knows what he'll find during his investigation, but he's not a tribalist, and that's a good thing. And the only thing that's rewarded in the GOP right now and in the Trump White House is not how good you are at your job, not how smart you are. The only thing that gets rewarded is how loyal you are, how tribal you are, and everything else be damned.
Yeah, I was in the Nixon administration, as you know, and I thought after watching the Clinton impeachment, I thought I'd never see another one. But I think we're in impeachment territory now for the first time. Well, I think that the obstruction of justice was the number one charge against Nixon that brought him down. Obstruction of justice was the number one charge against Bill Clinton, which led to his indictment in the House. He won in the Senate. And I think I'm a lapse lawyer. I cannot tell you what it meets all the legal definitions, but I can tell you from a lay point of view, it looks like he was trying to impede the investigation. Mm-hmm. He was using his power to do that, and when James Comey didn't go along with him, when he wasn't his boy, he fired him, which I think is also relevant to the question of what he was trying to do. So from my point of view, this is of enormous consequence for his presidency. I think if you look at the three bombshells we've had, the Comey firing last week, then the sharing of this highly classified information with the Russians of all people, and now telling Comey to drop the case, what we see is a presidency that's starting to come apart.
Who knows exactly how this is going to end up? And I know that we're sort of all banking on impeachment right now, but I don't think impeachment's going to be the thing. I think it's going to be resignation, but I think we're in the middle of winter now. Yes, it is true. But as I like to say, everybody enjoy the fall. This is it. This is effectively the end of the Trump administration. Everybody just relax, sit quietly, coolly, but don't forget to still get out there and make yourself heard on these particular issues. See, antipathy is what led us to this point. The fact that we don't pay attention, the fact that we just could not get out to vote for her, oh my God, because of her emails, we can't vote for her. That's ridiculous. We're now opening up the coasts to oil drilling. You know, I heard a scientist say the other day, there's an 80% chance that we're going to have a nuclear war, an 80% chance, because my God, we just can't vote for her emails. Our politics needs to change. The way that we pay for our elections needs to change. All of that is true. But the way we've responded to our democracy is not fabulous. And that needs to change. Enjoy the last year of the Trump administration. Who the hell knows what we're going to see going forward?
With our breaking news, Steve Bannon has been fired. It has been a chaotic 4 weeks, even by these White House standards. So let's just all take a moment, just remind you what has happened, incredibly significant events, one after the other. So in no particular order, President Trump, in the last 4 weeks, has fires his chief strategist, fires his chief of staff, hires a new one, hires a new communications director, fires him, hires a new one, his fourth in 7 months, publicly shames his attorney general multiple times, loses a health care bill, publicly shames the three Republicans who voted against it multiple times, bans transgender individuals from the military without telling the military, ticks off the Boy Scouts, makes up a phone call with said scouts, makes up another phone call with the president of Mexico, thanks Vladimir Putin for expelling Americans, hundreds of them, takes days to sign a bipartisan sanctions bill and then blasts Congress for making him sign it, condemns leaks, but then says he likes the leaks because it shows people love him. Hold on a second. Sorry, this is long. Encourages police officers to be rough with suspects during arrests, publicly shames the Republican leader he needs to get anything done multiple times, embraces an unpassable immigration plan that sparks a debate about the Statue of Liberty and the definition of cosmopolitan. He threatens North Korea with nuclear war, tells Guam it'll help tourism. Then his own chief strategist calls his bluff and says, nah, there's no military option in North Korea. Threatens Venezuela with a military option. After a Nazi rally in which someone was murdered, the president blames both sides. After the backlash, cleans it up, denounces those white supremacists, but then hours later, erases all of it and makes everything worse by again blaming both sides, saying there were fine people there. No, they weren't. They were Nazis. Suggests there's no difference between George Washington and Robert E. Lee. Publicly shames CEOs who abandon him, then loses two of his entire jobs councils after execs jump ship. Considers a pardon for, of all people, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, all the while he's facing these accusations of racism. By the way, plugs his winery in Virginia when asked if he will, as president, visit Charlottesville. Tells the world to study a lie during a terror attack. And gets condemnations from Democrats, Republicans, former presidents, world leaders, allies, his own staff, and the Pope. And still has no regrets.
1 month. That was 1 month worth of activity. And every single month of this presidency has been exactly that. Whenever I'm watching a movie about a fictional event, the more exciting, the more twists and turns. Yeah. You know, go. That I'm all good with. You know, it's very exciting. And I always thought, because I watch this stuff all the time. I'm always reading about this stuff. I'm always watching the news. And never, ever, ever has it been as eventful as it is right now. And when I thought about it, I mean, long before Trump became president, I go, man, wouldn't that be just nutty? Right. If we had, you know, that kind of thing where it's just every single day, just dangerous, boom, all this crazy. I go, wow, what an exciting time that would be in politics. And even when Dum Dum started running for president, I go, wow, it's a crazy year. What in the bloody hell is all this, you know? But it gets exhausting. As you heard in that clip, she stops right in the middle of it. I'm sorry. I got to take a drink of water because I just can't. It's too much. And that's the way it's been just for this entire administration. It's turned journalism in a big way. We've watched a lot of our local newspapers, a lot of towns, both small and big, shut down for any number of reasons. A lot of people, most people, unfortunately, are getting their news from social media right now. I follow social media sites, but I only follow legitimate ones. I mean, I don't get my news from InfoWars. I don't get my news from Fox. I get it from the Washington Post and the New York Times and New York Daily News and some of these other big reputable ones. But most folks, and the news that you see in, say, your Facebook feed is controlled by what they think is going to keep you around, which is generally kept around by what's trending. And what tends to trend are lies. So it's been a very dark time for journalism. There's tons of great journalistic work still going on out there, but it's really hard to get to the good news. And one of the things, I was reading an article recently in the New York, I think it was the New York Times and New York Daily News. And the headline was Trump and the Press, 10 questions journalists never thought they'd have to ask back in January, the illegal vote thing. What about these illegal votes? What do you mean illegal votes? You lost by 3 million because of these illegal votes. They never, ever thought they would have to ask the president of the United States to denounce Nazis. That, of course, happened back in August. Of course, and then, of course, there was fairness for white nationalists. A journalist said to Trump, and I quote, "I just don't understand what you're saying. You're saying that the press has treated white nationalists unfairly." Whenever I throw out the white nationalist thing, Trump people just, I'm sorry, you guys. You voted for a white nationalist. And whether you're a white nationalist or not, you voted for a white nationalist. And you now get to say for the rest of your life that you voted for a white nationalist. You definitely don't get to say that you didn't vote for a white nationalist. Moron. Of course, Rex Tillerson called the president a moron. And people had to ask the president, did your secretary of state, the guy that you picked the guy that you had never, ever met prior to 2016, but you managed to pick him as your Secretary of State. Did that guy call you a moron? One of the things that we learned from the Trump book that came out, Fire and Fury, and I'm promoting it, obviously, because the Trump doesn't want you to read it, is that 100% of the people, Michael Wolff said this, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said 100% of the people in the White House do not have confidence in Trump. 100% of them know that he is a moron. See, so this calls into question the 25th Amendment, because the people that enact the 25th Amendment, which is where you remove the president based on his mental health, based on the fact that he cannot serve in that job anymore. The people that enact the 25th Amendment are those that are closest to him, those that work in the West Wing, those that work inside the White House with him. Those are the people that enact the 25th Amendment. And if 100% of them, right down to his kids, his wife, his daughter, but I repeat myself, every single one of them knows that he cannot do this job, knows that he is mentally ill, knows that he might start a nuclear war, and they are not enacting the 25th Amendment. I understand how scary it must be, but they back the moron. So 100% of people in the White House know that he can't serve, know that he shouldn't serve, and know that his mental health is deteriorating and deteriorating quickly. And they're doing absolutely nothing about it. Child molester. 2 months ago, the president came out and endorsed an accused child molester. And our press had to ask him, "I'm sorry, are you endorsing an accused child molester? Do you think that an accused child molester would be better than a Democrat?" Sons of bitches. This is definitely not the way we hear presidents talk in public. We know that they swear behind the scenes. We all swear behind the scenes. Man, I turn off this mic after every show and the first thing I do is scream the F word. I'm kidding. But I do use a lot of swears in my life. Old hip hop kid here. The fact that he said, injected himself into the fact that these football players were taking a knee, which, by the way, also only promoted it and almost made Colin Kaepernick the person of the year for Time Magazine. And it's gotten Colin Kaepernick an award and all kinds of new respect. But he goes, "Fire these sons of bitches." The fact that the press had to ask this guy about that is absolutely insane. Is slavery wrong? This is from back in November. So the question was, does this administration believe that the president... Does the president believe that slavery is wrong? Quoting here, this question came from April Ryan, a White House reporter for American Urban Radio Networks. Ryan added, "Before you answer, Mary Frances Berry, the historian, said in 1860, there was a compromise. The compromise was to have southern states keep slavery, but the Confederacy fired on Fort Sumner. That caused the Civil War. And because the Civil War, what happened? The North won, and there's no slavery." Sarah Huckabee Sanders, "I think it's disgusting and absurd to suggest that anyone inside this building would support slavery." No, it's not. The president is a white nationalist. And then there was, of course, Pocahontas, the Pocahontas comment. All Trump had to do was talk to the, was to honor the Navajo code talkers. And instead decided to take a shot at Elizabeth Warren by calling her Pocahontas. Which, so the money in politics, that's obviously a big problem. But the way the president talks, he gets every bit of his information from right-wing media. That's why he talks about things like the war on Christmas, which doesn't exist. That's why he says Obamacare is the worst thing ever when he doesn't even know what it is. Because if you listen to conservative talk, and I do, these are the things that they say. And it doesn't have to be true. And most of his tweets come during Fox and Friends. In the morning when Fox and Friends is on. And you'll see him jump from subject to subject to subject to subject. And it will align perfectly with what they're talking about on Fox and Friends. This guy doesn't know anything. He only knows what right-wing media tells him. And that's the way it is for most of our conservatives too. He was so mad that the book came out. But don't worry about it, sir. Most of your followers / dim bulbs They don't read. The president himself is functionally illiterate. That's another thing that we found out. Perhaps he's too vain to wear reading glasses. He's 71. Or maybe he doesn't know how to read. We don't know. And then, of course, asking about far-right tweets to the president. The fact that the president tweeted out something from a white nationalist group in Europe is absolutely bonkers. And I'm reassessing now. I no longer think that it's a fabulous idea when the stories that affect our daily lives are that raucous and exciting. I now long for the days of old-timey, boring news where there was a drip, drip, drip. There's a puzzle piece here, and there's a puzzle piece there. Take a week off, and there's a puzzle piece there, and a puzzle piece there. And once you get enough of them, you assemble them all together, and you go, aha, now I've got the full picture. Rather than there being 10 news cycles a day, 20 news cycles a day, I've missed the days when a day was a news cycle. Maybe 2 or 3 days was a news cycle. If something would happen, we talk about it for a few days. You tune into CNN for a few minutes, you hear it, they talk about it for a few days to make sure that everybody gets it. But it's happening so fast now, I'm no longer there. I want the days of old, boring news. Government is supposed to be boring, like economics, supposed to be boring. These things are not supposed to be big, flashy movies.
Ed had a tough week. He went to Indiana. Hoosier country, stood on a basketball court and called the hoop a basketball ring. What else is in his lexicon? Baseball sticks, football hats. But sure, I'm the foreign one.
So there's a list that comes out every year of the words that people are sick of, the words that they would no longer like to hear. Of course, there's the top word of the year, and then there's Merriam-Webster's word of the year, and then there's the internet word of the year, and then we introduce new words. But there are words and phrases that people absolutely get sick of. You probably don't hear much about this list. It's a little bigger this year. I mean, bigger as in its profile. And that is because people have decided that some of the things that have shaped the last year, they would definitely like to see out of our lexicon. Quoting here, North Michigan Lake Superior State University, about a week ago, released its 43rd annual list of words banished from the Queen's English for misuse, overuse, or general uselessness. Now, it's tongue-in-cheek, non-binding, but the list of 14 words or phrases comes from thousands of suggestions, okay? This year's list includes, let me ask you this. Here's the thing. If you have a question, just ask it. You don't have to qualify it with that. Unpack. Impactful. Nothing burger. People are tired of hearing the word. I'm tired of hearing the word nothing burger. Tons. Dish. Drill down. Let that sink in. A lot of these are obviously from internet memes. The top vote getter. The very, very top vote getter. This one that people would like to never, ever hear again in their entire lives is fake news. Fake news, we ended up with fake news because of conservative media. Because the vast majority, if not everything, in conservative media is an upside down and inside out effing lie. Flat out. And people start saying, Stop paying attention to that stuff. It's fake news. But now, anytime the president hears something he doesn't like or something that's critical of him, he, without thinking about it, calls it fake news. And dictators around the world have been copying his language and using this exact phrase. Other brutal dictatorial countries are now using, their leaders are now using the phrase fake news. Some of the other ones that people would like to see go away are pre-owned, onboarding and offboarding, the gig economy, and the redundant hot water heater. Bloody hell. also on the list, covfefe. I know y'all think it's cute, but but stop using Covfefe.
You called Bill Clinton's past transgressions, quote, totally, totally, totally disgraceful and unacceptable. Senator, do you regret saying that?
I was asked a question. You know, one of the things, Andrea, and that question annoys me. I cannot walk down the street. Secretary Clinton knows this. Without being told how much I have to attack Secretary Clinton. Want to get me on the front pages of the paper? I make some vicious attack. I have avoided doing that, trying to run an issue-oriented campaign. I was asked a question.
You didn't have to answer it that way, though.
Well,
why did you?
Then if I don't answer it, then there's another front page source. Yes. And I mean this seriously. You know that. We've been through this. Yes, his behavior was deplorable. Have I ever once said a word about that issue? No, I have not. I'm going to debate Secretary Clinton, Governor Malley, on the issues facing the American people, not Bill Clinton's personal behavior.
An issue-driven campaign. Issue-driven news. Issue-driven stories. This is another thing that the new politics has brought us. And I say new, even though it's 30 years old now, is we don't talk about the issues. Everything is a horse race. Everything is a sports headline. Everything is a tabloid. Everything is drama. And there's absolutely no issues that we talk about. And if we do manage to get an issue into the news, it immediately becomes a wedge issue. The subject of global warming, climate change, should have never, ever been a political issue. It's science. It's settled. There's empirical evidence. It's done. But if you believe in science, you're now a flaming libtard. And if you don't believe in climate change, well, then you're just the smartest person that ever walked. My representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, engages in a fair amount of this. She's absolutely refused to meet with us in person. And her conservative constituents are completely okay with it. They see that as all right. Because man, oh man, they do not want people yelling at her in public. Which is okay, I suppose. They don't want her being asked tough questions in public. I don't know if you remember back during the healthcare debate, these town halls became a bit of a circus. Because conservatives, after hearing what they heard on conservative media, which was not true, decided to get up and scream at their politicians at town halls. And now that the Democrats are out of power and the Republicans are in power, a lot of Republicans are refusing to hold town halls, and conservatives are going, that's A-OK. That's OK because the conservatives, the Tea Party, they remember when they were acting like children during the campaign. And they were screaming at politicians, and they go, my God, if we put conservative politicians in town halls and let liberals, and there's definitely going to be liberals in my county, and let liberals ask them questions, they might act as childish as we did in the Tea Party back in 2010. They just might do the same thing that we did, and we can't have that. But my representative needs to answer for what she's done. I suppose I shouldn't say it here, but I'm going to do so because I'm trying to create a degree of accountability. So I don't think I've got the time to run now. But the candidates that are being run in my district, I'm not inspired by any of them right now. Any of them. Good for them. They're running. They're citizens. Yay, yay, yay. But I'm not the least bit inspired by any of them. But whoever the Democrat is that ends up on the ballot versus my representative is going to get my vote, it will be unenthusiastic, and we know how those elections turn out. So if the Democrats in my area fail to unseat Jamie Herrera Butler in the upcoming election, this year's election, 2018, I will be running against her in 2020. And I am not kidding about that. I used to be a constituent for Kathy McMorris Rogers. And I didn't think I would hate anybody more than I hate. And I have no problem saying that. I hate my representative. She is awful. And when I moved to this district in 2011, first thing I did, right, before I even figured out where the damn house is that I was going to be living in, was I figured out who my representative is in this area. And I saw that it was a woman, a conservative woman. And I go, well, okay, well, let's find out. You know, let's not just right away just, right? Let's find out. And I started paying attention to her. And my God, what an awful, awful, awful representative. And of course, she's completely aligned herself with the Trump agenda even after he decided that it would be a fantastic idea to endorse an accused child molester. She still backs him. I want to finish today with this. There is an op-ed, or not an op-ed, but a letter to the editor published in The Columbian by Kenneth Campbell. Quoting here, will you get a tax cut? The temporary changes to the tax law the GOP plan will produce tax cuts for about 75% of Americans in 2018, according to the analysis of 220,000 real households published in the New York Times on December 18th, along with a tax calculator that you can use to approximate your own situation. About 25% of households will see higher taxes or no change in the next year. Meanwhile, corporate taxes will be cut permanently, with the top tax rate dropping by a whopping 40%, 16 points below the current level. That's daylight robbery, and Jamie Herrera Butler, Republican from Battleground, is an accomplice. The bill is designed to pay off wealthy donors of GOP congressional representatives, and she is sure enough one of those donors, stepping away from the letter here, and this is why she feels completely at peace with not meeting with us. She doesn't need us. She doesn't need our money. She just paid off her donors by voting for this, and she is an accomplice. But when my representative does put out press releases, when she does say things on Facebook, when she does put out videos, she talks about all of these things that absolutely don't. Alcohol's gonna get cheaper. You know, stupid things like that. What about the fish hatcheries? And what about hunting laws? And just none of this stuff that even matters. We are being poorly represented. You are very likely being poorly represented, even if you have a Democrat. There's still a pretty solid chance that you're being poorly represented because of the new politics, because of the money that's in our politics. And obviously, I didn't get to all my material today. Next week is going to be just as exciting. But I do want to leave you with this. We are in uncertain times at best. But I feel better. I feel more confident than I have ever felt about any number of things. At the very least, the presidency of one Donald Trump has more people engaged than ever. And I think a lot more people, now that we're close to a nuclear war, admitting their mistake in the 2016 election and beyond. And it's likely going to be a bloodbath for the Republican Party, although that's not a guarantee. We have to continue to stay engaged. Oh, and by the way, if we do win the House and or the Senate, and we do win the presidency in 2020, you don't get to just go back to stare at your phone and not paying attention to what's going on anymore. This is a lifelong process. It's easy for me because it's an honest interest. This is a hobby for me. And I know it's not for everybody. Some of this stuff can be drab. Some of this stuff can be boring. I do this podcast because I try to make it, put it in plain language and make it a little bit more exciting for you. I use voice inflections and all the rest, and I need you here. But it's a serious thing. And no matter how this year turns out, 2020, 2024, all the rest, no matter how those turn out, you need to stay engaged all the time. You don't have to marinate in it. You don't have to absorb it the way I absorb it, because that's ridiculous. But you do need to get involved and stay involved. And if you don't like the way your party is representing you, the way they're treating you, if you're a Republican, get into your local Republican chapter. That's where it all starts. All politics is local. If you're a Democrat, get into your local Democratic Party. All politics is local. That's where it starts. And you are not powerless. You are only powerless when you decide that it's too boring. You don't want to pay attention. Or, oh my God, you just can't vote for her because emails. Kind of puts it all in perspective, doesn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. We love both the Mac and the PC people. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or greet. Emails at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform, but also to entertain and to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.